Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, it is good to be back. It's good to be back with you both. It's good to be back in the studio. I'm disappointed in myself for missing the program last week, Pipe. I feel like I had like a almost like a Cal Ripken-esque sort of, you know, unimpeachable string of radio in my past where I just didn't miss a week, but I did miss, you know, I'm human, but I'm back and I appreciate you guys having me back, man. I hope, you know, you didn't question my commitment to the program for very long.
Baby, we got close on that one. We're not going to lie to you. It was getting a little tenuous.
We actually dreamed up a future for you. Because we weren't sure you were coming back in which you were a camp director. Of some camp in the North Woods, and all of the cabins would be named after defunct football franchises instead of, you know, trees or fish, instead of like Trout Cabin and Bass Cabin or Elm Oak. It would be, you know, NFL Europe teams USFL teams or something. And
yeah, so, baby, the premise behind that was that I made a comment about how I was sort of semi fascinated that you were like this older dude now that still loves camps.
Dude, and I do. I don't love camps though. I love this camp. I love this one particular camp. And honestly, like being a camp director would break me. Like I would last not even 1 week in that job. Like the only job for me in any kind of camp scenario is this one camp. And being the speaker, like that's the sweet spot.
We're kind of fascinated by like the camp lodge, which always has that sort of orange wood, yellow, you know, just they all look the same. They all
you nailed it.
They bring back that vibe every single time.
Dude, they totally bring back that vibe. And I have to say, like the dopest thing about this camp is that like my quarters, my little apartment at the camp is like, sorry, that's my phone going off, but my little apartment in the camp is it's actually in the chapel where I speak. So it's in like the basement of the chapel. It's super.
Dude, it's a
cozy
parsonage. They give you a parsonage, baby.
Dude, I get a little parse, man. I get a little parsonage when I'm on campus at Camp Barrical. So tip of the cap to the actual camp director. I could never do his job; it would break me. But he does it well. He does it with style and panache.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Parson Kluck with the kilt.
Parson Kluck with a kilt. That's it, man. So no, that I could see that alternate future in one sense, but in another sense, I think I'm where I need to be. So, and where I need to be, boys, is on the radio with you, doing radio, making radio magic on this program. And that being said, I want to get right into it, boys. I want to encourage people to visit LagarceRoasters.com, get a bag of Happy Rant Signature Blend. It is the best coffee you will ever have. And I'm not just saying that because I'm business partners with Hector Lagares, although I am, full disclosure. This is great coffee. Hector Lagares is he's a very exotic coffee maker, so you should support that as well. And boys, let's get right into this because and you know what? I'm gonna hop into the funny one first because we're talking about food and beverage because we are now in the beverage industry via one Hector Lagares. There was an article recently by a writer who I think the three of us kind of respect and enjoy typically. His name's Brett McCracken, and he wrote this piece on TGC about whether or not food has a gender. And I just want to get you guys to comment briefly on the premise of the article. So, Piper, let's start with you, and then we'll get Ron's input on it, and then we can go into a little activity that I've got planned for the group.
Yeah, for the most part, the article is pretty, you know, pretty straightforward. Argument for biblical complementarianism, as the proponents of that viewpoint like to call it, because if you put biblical in front of something, it becomes unassailable, because as we know, everybody views the Bible the exact same way. So that was like 80% of the article. It was a pretty traditional view, but looking at sort of the inherent gendered characteristics of things. But it started out with him talking about how they had two restaurants selected depending on they're expecting a child. They were going to find out if it was a boy or a girl, and when they found out, they would pick one restaurant or the other to go celebrate at based on the sort of inherent femininity or masculinity of the food served at these restaurants. And I found that to be amusing.
Dude, can I just add about the intro to that article? Like, Brett McCracken and I probably have a lot in common. Like if you were to like Venn diagram the two of us, there would be a lot of overlap. But I think just reading the intro to that piece, it made me go, oh my gosh, this guy sounds like such a yuppie white man. You know what I mean? And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a yuppie white man. You know, like I didn't like seeing on the page basically what my life looks like. And it filled me with shame. I don't know if you had that kind of response to the intro as well, Piper, or if I'm alone in that.
I've known Brett for a long time, and so like I sort of recognize some of the differences between he and I. We went to college together, and he's a critic. He's a critical person, but like that is his trade. And so film criticism, food criticism, and so when he does food stuff, it's very sort of gourmet and fine food in a world that I know nothing about, care nothing for. You know, so he's going to be like a pickled beets with a compote of this and a reduction of that, and all words that make me just want a hamburger. That's where he and I would part ways in terms of our respective.
Yeah, he's like a watercress and fennel guy.
Yeah, exactly. And as far as I'm concerned, watercress is, you know, it's like the packing peanuts of whatever food it's in.
Exactly. Big R, I want you to respond to the premise of the article ever so briefly. Keeping in mind the irons in the fire that you've got with TGC, so nuance this one, man.
Yeah, well, okay.
Don't lose an opportunity to be a main stage speaker in like 2040.
Dude, seriously, yeah.
That's 2040, they have when I'm not alive? Anymore?
They have long memories.
Exactly. When I don't exist to speak anymore, yeah, that'll be great. That'll be great to be one of the plenary guys post-death. It'll be awesome.
There you go, man.
So I'm reading a little bit of the article and sort of the premise in the beginning where they were doing a gender reveal party. We should talk about that sometime too, boys. Well, and then
to be fair, they said they did not throw a big party. This was just like a family thing, which that's, you know, we're moving towards acceptability there.
Yes. So they immediately knew, him and his wife immediately knew that brats and fries for dinner were more
brats.
I like saying brats to celebrate our baby boy than kale and candied beets. Yeah. To which I immediately just got a text from a Big M right here. Hold on, boys. You want to hear this?
She said,
my birthday meal request was brats and sauerkraut and beer for what it's worth. So she's like, don't put me in a box. Don't stereotype me, Brett.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I feel like there might be some gender confusion either with the food or a person here. This is all very puzzling to me, Ronnie, because brats are masculine. That's what I mean.
I know. And so Big M is gonna take some upends here with Brett Mack here.
Dude, I love it because like that text, baby, is so it's the 90s-est thing, because if there's one thing people who like came of age in the 90s hate, it's being put into any kind of a box. Absolutely. So I feel like that's perfect, and that's why this discussion is potentially a lot of fun. So I'm going to ask you guys, though, to put some different kinds of food in a box in a sense, because what I'm going to do is just throw out different foods, and I want the two of you to comment on whether they're masculine or feminine, just so we can get to the heart of the spirit of this article, which is what TGC
offering a service to our listeners. We wouldn't want them to have gender confusion about their meals if they're celebrating something. You know, if it's like a church potluck, how much you have to be careful how many feminine foods you have there, because that could be an issue.
I don't want my plate to trigger anyone.
Right. So guys, we're just trying to make some progress here, right? We're trying to tackle a major issue.
This is
here.
A huge issue, you know, which is why it got the column space that it did on TGC. So tip of the cap to them for tackling this one, because it's tough and it's hard and there's a lot of nuance. So without further ado, I'm throwing foods out. I haven't done a lot of thinking on this, so you guys just give me your assessment of these foods. First, banana.
Clearly masculine.
Okay.
I'm gonna go. Yeah, that's low hanging fruit.
Dude, right. I'm starting you out easy.
No pun with the low hanging fruit. I'm gonna go feminine on that one.
Oh, interesting.
Defend yourself, or the banana, as it were.
Yep.
I have no defense.
Baby, you're just being contrarian. Are you really like embracing the importance of this discussion at this point?
No, I am. I promise. I'm totally, I mean, I'm on Amazon.com right now. I'm totally serious about this discussion.
Because
this is why society is going to hell in a handbasket, because there's somebody who can look at a banana and think feminine. Like, that's, you are what is wrong with America, Ronnie, right there. You just summed it up.
Maybe, I mean, the church, you got to think a little more deeply. And
the church needs your leadership on this. Like, we need some tweets that start with the word pastors and then a comma and then like some wisdom about what foods are or what
boys,
gender.
Boys, can you give me some ways that I can integrate this into my sermon on Sunday?
Ask TGC. I mean, they're
ask
in that
bread to crack. Yeah.
Yeah, they're in that business. This is what they do. All right, next food. Avocado. Masculine or feminine?
Transgender.
Ooh, Piper, very provocative. Very, very provocative. I love it.
That's why it's such a popular garnish for toast amongst the progressive millennial crowd, because it is a sort of genderless or gender amorphous, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go transgender for I don't know what it started as, but it's moving to something else.
I don't subscribe to Piper's just radical progressive definitions at all, man. I'm gonna go masculine on an Avi.
And Ron, can I ask you a follow up question on that one vis-a-vis hipsters? So why, like, I love avocado too, but why on toast? Like, why is that like a hipster snack? Because I feel like toast is it's a different way to go with avocado. So why that pairing?
Well, so I think Avi's high protein, right? And so when you mix it with toast, what they've done is they've really turned it into like a breakfast food. So that's a way that they've really sort of transformed into like kind of like hipster breakfast.
They've redeemed the toast.
They've redeemed the avocado. I'm actually writing a book right now called Redeeming the Avocado.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. Crossway.
It'll be out on TGC in 2040.
That'd be an even more provocative book if avocado was transgender.
Ooh. I like this. See, this is good synergy.
We're getting really controversial today.
What started as funny has become like a real like exercise for our fields. But okay, next food, quinoa.
Oh my gosh.
This is Ronnie's field of expertise. I'm going to leave this one to him.
Judas Priestess.
Yeah, Judas Priestess.
Quinoa. You know what's so funny, man? I feel like most of the dudes I've ever been with have ordered it as opposed to the women, but it feels more feminine to me.
Interesting.
Are they just trying to get in touch with their feminine side in ordering such a thing?
I think you're probably correct, Pipe.
See, I also would have gone more feminine for quinoa. But
really, what I said is true, huh? Like, you never, like, you always see dudes when they're like trying to be good with their eating, like ordering quinoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, whenever I see a dude ordering quinoa, I just feel sad inside. You know what I mean?
Not as sad as him when he eats it.
Exactly. Because I feel like that's a dude he's living for other people. You know what I mean? He's not living the life he wants to live.
Right. I mean, you'd never see Jared C. order quinoa. Would you ever see Jared C. Wilson order quinoa? No. Never.
I don't know him that well. I don't know what he's like. Why would he not order quinoa?
You're telling me he is
living his best life now.
Correct.
That's good. I mean, good for him, man. That's terrific. All right, one more. Oatmeal. So like a bowl of oatmeal for breakfast.
You made this really tough, Big T.
I know. I'm. You guys, it's iron sharpening iron right now.
I'm going mask on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my inclination on that one as well, as masculine, mainly because I think of oatmeal as prison food, and the majority of inmates are men.
There you go. Interesting. Interesting. Well, boys, I appreciate that dialogue, because really that's – dialogue is where it starts with these things. And, you know, we can write about these. The reason you put that article out there is to get a discussion going and to get people talking. So I want to thank you for entering into that with me, and we actually have some other stuff to talk about. So I'm going to get right into another TGC thing, which is something, Ron, that you texted over, and I think it was, you know, it was a topic that almost got cut in our pre-production meeting, and I would have been sad to see it go, because I think it's a more serious one, and it's kind of interesting, and it's on the level of kind of missional, incarnational versus people of a like mind and like culture worshiping together. And I feel like via text, and you can nuance this out, you can go first, but I feel like via text you were arguing for, you know, why is it bad for people who are alike to worship together? And I responded with, I think you can set your watch by this pendulum swinging wildly every 15 years or so. And I think we've been in a like-minded people worshiping together phase for a while. And we're about to swing it back toward like, hey, different people worship together. But I want to hear you speak to that. And I want you to kind of defend your position on it. Cause I think, Piper might disagree with you, and I think I might disagree too. So, lay it on us, man.
But no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah, no, I mean, so it was, I think the article was like five things you need to look for when you're choosing a new church or something like that.
I think the first four were expository preaching, and then the last one was diversity.
Yeah.
Absolutely, man. One, expository preaching. Two, expositional preaching. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, good.
You know, a little nuance there. And then
a little diversity.
You're right. The fifth one was choose people who are unlike you. And so I think like coming out of this whole Jeff Vanderstelle, you know, missional kind of, you know, mentality that we've been trading out on, you know, for the last 10 years or so, which is fine and good. I think it struck me that like what's so strange about that is not that I necessarily disagree with it on paper, but at the same time, there's a natural default in us that when we're walking through the doors of a brand new church, like, we're not looking for somebody unlike us. We in fact are looking for somebody like us to find some commonality. And I don't know if that's the wrong place to start. I don't know that we should end there, but to find somebody where you have some commonality with, it, as a way to exist within, you know, a framework of having people unlike you, I that's just not that big of a deal. And I think it's actually a little more natural, maybe, right? That's my
I mean, I think people always can be counted on to do what they most want to do. And I think what they most want to do is be with people who are like them. So
I mean,
I don't know
that. So don't you think, though, when you walk into a church, I mean, again, we can say right or wrong. I'm saying like when you walk into a church and you're looking around, like you're like the people or the things that catch your eye, whether it's people or otherwise, are going to be the things that you're most familiar with. I mean, that's just what it's going to be, right?
I think in the circles that we run in, you don't have to tell people to like seek out people like them, you know, because I think and Piper, you can speak to sort of how far back this goes, but you know, since I've been sort of a sentient adult in the Reformed kind of church movement, it's been a lot of people who are basically the same person. So I guess you don't have to tell Reformed people to do this. In terms of finding people who are like them. But I guess, again, kind of knee-jerk reaction, like I do think there's value in being around people and worshiping with people who are not exactly like you. Piper, speak to this.
I agree with Ron's premise that the most natural thing for people to do is to find somebody, I mean, whether or not like us, that everybody has sort of a norm that we are comfortable with. So something familiar to you, even if it's not like you, you know, whether so if you grew up in a more multicultural context, you're probably going to be more comfortable in that context. For example, I've attended plenty of sort of suburban mega churches. Mm-hmm. That's not what I grew up in, and it's not what I gravitate towards. And so I always felt a little bit like an outsider, even though I look very much like I fit in a suburban mega church. So, but I think in terms of gravitating towards a norm, that's absolutely true. I think that was a poorly phrased point in that article, because I think the point they're making is that there is a lot of value in a diverse worshiping body. So people have different backgrounds, different perspectives, different races. I'm curious, you know, what they would say about the gender aspect of things. But the diversity is valuable, and I think that's a biblical concept. But saying look for people different than you implies it's a really sort of stilted way to put it. It feels awkward to me. The question that Ron raised, though, was should we – I think he even asked something about guilt. Like, should we feel bad for going to going to a church where everybody is like us? And that's an interesting one because most of us do. Like, is there an inherent problem in us attending a church with people who look like us, sound like us, are cut from the same sort of socioeconomic segment that we are? Is that bad?
I mean, we're Reformed guys. We should always feel bad.
We believe in grace because we constantly feel bad.
Because we constantly feel terrible. Big R, you're the resident man of the cloth here. And you're the only one on this podcast who pastors a church. What do you feel this tension in your church or not really?
Well, no, because I mean, so we're like, you know, we're in like a smaller town scenario, right? So to, you know, most of the churches in the town are mainline denoms, and they're filled with very, you know, a lot of older people. And so, and they're super liberal churches. So to realistically go to a church, if you're in your 30s or 40s, and be able to worship with people that are unlike you would have to put yourself in one of those scenarios. And so if you're in that age range and you happen to come to our church, you're going to see some, you know, not everybody, but you're going to see a lot of people that are like you, but at least you're in a place where you can, you know, depend on, you know, the teaching and the message being safe and secure and, you know, conservative and those types of things. So it's just really interesting because it really depends on your context, right? So if you are in one of these like super, super suburban-y, you know, just, you know, areas where, you know, there's a McChurch on every corner, then yeah, you might want to go and kind of seek out something that's going to get you out of what the cultural norm is for that particular environment. Right. But
right.
I don't know.
I think it's a different question also. I mean, if this is an article aimed at white people, it means one thing. And assuming since it comes from the Gospel Coalition, it's aimed at a majority white audience. This is a really different thing when aimed at minorities, though, because if you're a black person or a Hispanic person or an Asian person and you're going to a generally Reformed church, like 9 out of 10 people around you are white, which means you don't have to seek out people different than yourself because you the entire church is like you have put yourself out there to be part of this church because you value expository preaching, biblical preaching, textual preaching, you know, preaching from the original languages and finding people different than yourself. So it's a different thing for a white person though, because we don't have to think about it the same way. I mean, in conversations with minority friends, that's the point that I've had to learn bit by bit over the years more than anything, is that white people don't have to pay attention to race in America, and which is why we're always uncomfortable when race comes up. And minorities never stop thinking about race because white culture is sort of the dominant thing. And so that's another reason it was an odd phrasing, because it assumes that this is to a white audience who is making a decision about how to interact with people different than themselves, and it sort of disregards the inherent difference that minorities engage every time they walk into a church of, you know, that is majority white.
Yeah. And I mean, the thought that occurs to me is at, you know, 0 points in our history have people in black churches been like, you know, we got to get some more white people. You know what I mean? I think.
And for good reason, because we've ruined a lot of stuff that they've had going on over the years.
Dude, right. So, I mean, it's just an interesting tension. I know in the metro area that I live in, you know, and especially being in a college context, I mean, there's always this sort of academic, you know, discussions of race where, you know, we ostensibly have it all figured out, but, you know, I'm not sure. I'm just not sure, you know. I don't think we do, but anyway, boys,
one final thing. I don't think people should feel guilty for going to a church that is majority whatever their culture is. Mm-hmm. I think the point is there needs to be an openness to people who are different. So if there are people from a different socioeconomic class or different races, different backgrounds, different countries who show an interest in your church, are you a place where that is valued and absorbed and learned from, as opposed to sort of subjugated to the majority culture, whatever that is? So I think that's probably where we need to land, as opposed to thinking every time I show up to church and I see 8 out of 10 people are white, I should feel low grade guilt for being here. I don't think that's healthy, because I think it takes away from the community that you are part of.
Yeah, that's a good point, man, for sure. Boys, we got time for one last topic. I know we got to get Big R out of the studio here. He's got a baby. Do you have a? Are you going on another trip, or you just got
stuff?
Or
do you have another? Do you have to, like, ordination revisions to do, or where, or what? What do you have going on?
Oh man, I made all my revisions yesterday. It was insane. Yeah,
dude, that's quite the ringer they're putting you through, right?
Yeah, man. It's a 3-year process with papers, revisions. I don't even know if these revisions are going to work. I just did everything they said. I mean, they might come back with, like, 28 more. I don't know.
Yeah. Man, that's tough.
Do you need help? I mean, I could jump in and help with some things.
I mean, yeah, I need help. And no, you really can't help.
All right.
But I appreciate that, Pipe. That's really nice. That's really nice. I mean, nobody's offered any help in the 3 pages I need to write on the deity of Christ, except for Wayne Grudem. Grudem has been a major help.
Dude, Grudy has reached out as he
stepped in,
as he often does.
He often does. Yeah.
Dude, what a stand up guy. What a guy. You know, absolutely. Say what you want about Wayne Grudem, but I mean, who's sitting up with you late at night there at the breakfast nook in A-Town, helping you go over those notes. But
the answer
Grudy
to that, baby, is Wayne. Wayne is.
Yeah. Fountains of Wayne. Absolutely.
Fountains of Wayne. Absolutes. Yeah. So there
Boys, speaking of people who are not young, Wayne Grudem is not, he's not a young man anymore, but there he is in A-Town, you know, burning the midnight oil with Big R. I recently watched a movie in the theater called Mission Impossible Fallout.
Oh, boy.
This is the
Tommy.
Big summer. Yeah, very arty. It's actually a Terrence Malick film. You know, it was just a bunch of, like, flowers opening in the desert, and you were just left to kind of draw conclusions about it.
But, zero dialogue, and we all pretend we like it.
And the impossible mission was figuring out what it means at all.
Brett McCracken and his wife were there, actually. I think we caught him right before the big gender reveal dinner. But but anyway, I saw Mission Impossible Fallout. And in the fashion of those movies, it was very fun to watch. My boys are at, like, exactly the right age for that kind of thing, and that they think all the car chases and explosions are really cool. But two, I think, meaningful things occurred to me as I was watching the film. One is that Tom Cruise is 56 years old. My dad, by the time he hit 56, he already had a grandkid. So he was a grandfather at 56. You know, you're doing generally, like, old man things at 56, except that in the movie, Tom Cruise was doing all the things that he's always done in those movies, which is a lot of sprinting and jumping and fighting and seducing of young women and, like, dangling off of cliffs. And except that he was doing it with the kind of fleshy, bulbous face that you get when you're 59. So it was really confusing and interesting to me on the level of, like, it just to me was an object lesson in how our culture is so resistant to aging. And, like, the guy in the triad of Mission Impossible people who used to be, like, the young whippersnapper who was doing all the, like, computer programming is Simon Pegg, who's 48. So, like, he's a relatively old man himself.
Yeah,
now
can you be impish in 48?
Dude, yes, if anyone could be impish in 48, it's Simon Pegg. But I think he even fails at being impish, because when you're 48, you're, like, sending a kid to college, or, like, maybe watching your kid get married. And, like, these are real things that happen when you're 48 years old. And instead, like, they were still making masks and fighting and doing Mission Impossible things. And as a sort of corollary to this movie experience, I actually rented Clear and Present Danger, the old Harrison Ford movie from the 90s.
Yeah, because Harrison was kind of doing that. He had the same gig, man.
Dude, he kind of did.
He still does.
In Clear and Present Danger, though, he was 52 when he made that movie, and he was doing awesome old man stuff. And in fact, he wore like a members-only jacket, like an old man windbreaker for, like, the duration of the movie. And he was basically, like, beating you with his mind at that point. He wasn't doing a whole lot of, like, action-y things except for the very last scene. So it was just interesting to me. On
he was never a true he wasn't a true action movie guy anyway, because
he was
because like
he
the directors are like, oh, you're the slowest man alive. If we have you sprint, it's a slow motion scene. Like he's, yeah, dude, he just wasn't just athletic. Like,
but isn't just like this kind of like I look at like what TC's doing. I'm sorry, Terrence Malick's doing in Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just see him as being kind of like the new James Bond. You know, James Bond was old when he did all that stuff too, man. Right?
Yeah, he was. I mean, I guess.
There's a reason they rotate out the James Bonds. And it's, you know, partly because you can only watch, you know, Pierce Brosnan so many times before you realize he should be a butler, not a, you know, spy master. But it's, I think it's so that they can keep him sort of perpetually like 43, you know, because that's like the, like that late 30s
that's
to early 40s
spot.
Is like the sweet spot for you're the smartest because you have lots of experience, but you're still young enough to be athletic and spry. Yeah. And, you know, you can fist fight nine people at once and shoot straight.
Well, how long do you think? So here's the question then. How long do we think TC has in this whole gig? I would say he's going to push this thing another 10 years. That's my prediction.
Dude, he's got to go to old man roles like now.
Dude, if it hasn't happened now, it's never going to happen.
He can transition to Denzel action style, which is like retired tough guy who no longer sprints and jumps, but in close quarters still knows all the moves to, you know, disarm somebody and like,
well, yeah, it's like the dude
crush
from,
their windpipe
from,
and whatever else.
The dude from Taken from those movies. Yeah.
Liam Neeson.
I can't remember his name, Big T.
Yeah, no, but I knew exactly what you were talking about because it was like old man close quarters fighting,
Liam Neeson is the actor and the character's name was like Brian something or other.
Yeah, Liam Neeson's man. He's the guy. Yeah, for
he
sure.
He is the guy. He's the guy.
But see, TC, here's the thing, man. This is what I think. I think TC looks at a guy like Liam Neeson's, right? And he's like looking at him and Neeson's is probably not that much older, but in TC's mind, he's thinking, dude, these old guys playing those action roles, not really seeing himself as being, you know,
dude,
in the same category for sure.
In TC's mind, he's still the young guy like sliding across the hardwood floor.
Dude, in the young Scientology guy sliding across the hardwood.
Playing beach volleyball in jeans and
an oiled up torso on the way to a date. Yeah.
He's like the guy at the end of that German movie where he was like in Nazi Germany when he said like long live sacred Germany, but it sounded like he said long live Scientology before they like shot him. I mean, he's still that guy.
He is that guy in his mind. But in reality, though, he's a 56-year-old man with a bulbous nose and a really obvious dye job. And it's sad.
Explain the word bulbous to us, baby.
Baby, so
I know what it means, but I want to hear you explain it.
That was actually the title of the column that I wrote about the movie.
Yeah,
it's called Everybody's Nose Got Bulbous, which really is what happened. You know, like I'm watching this movie going like, I feel like I'm watching all my old uncles do things that they wouldn't actually be doing.
Just picture John Voight's face and that's a bulbous nose.
Dude, right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a big, fleshy, bulbous nose, which is like what happens to your face when you get to a certain age, when you're like grandpa age, you know.
Baby, didn't you make the point that John Voight was the same age as TC in the first Mission Impossible?
Dude, I did, except that John Voight was doing old man things in that movie. He was just like walking around in the shadows wearing like a trench coat.
Well,
like
that was the point. He was like, he was the leader of their team because he was sort of the like, he had washed out of the physical end of the spectrum. I was like, well, I can't do what you guys do, but I can be the brains of the operation. Whereas Tom Cruise is like, nope, 30 years later, still got it.
But dude, here's the thing. So I got in an argument with this dude the other day and he goes, man, he goes, I think it was after services on Sunday. And he goes, dude, he's all, well, Tom Cruise never ages. I mean, he can just play those parts forever. I said, no way, dude. I said, literally, look at a promo shot of Jerry Maguire. Look at TC now. He does look older, man. He looks totally different, I think.
Dude, because he is older. You know, he's like.
Oh, I know, but he's had a lot of work done too.
He's had a lot of work done. But Jerry Maguire was like 22 years ago.
It was a long time ago, right?
It was a long time ago.
Think of TC as they still think of him as like looking like, no, he's been ageless. It's like, yeah, no, he still looks like darn good, but like when you look at him now, dude, he does not look like a 40-year-old Jerry Maguire anymore. I mean,
no, he doesn't.
Whatever it was, yeah.
Yeah, he absolutely doesn't. No, you're right, man. It's just, to me, it was fascinating, and they did this thing at the end of the movie, so this is like a spoiler, so if you want to fast forward a couple of minutes.
Can I fast forward this part? I haven't seen the movie yet.
Keep it yourself, man. We got a TC fan in the house with pipe here.
No,
all right,
man.
I'm gonna keep it to myself.
Here's the deal. I know the whole plot of the movie and I haven't seen it. So by all means,
that's because you saw the last one.
Yeah,
that's because
I saw the first 18 Mission Impossible movies, and so I know the plot.
Dude, so the thing is, they did a weird thing about his marriage in this one, where like at the end of one of the last ones, he and his wife had, he and his lady had this agreement where like they were basically going to be separated, and she was going to go underground and just kind of be in hiding, and he was going to stay like saving the world all over the place.
Recipe for a great marriage.
Recipe for a great marriage, of course. And so in this movie, like, come to find out, she remarried like a lantern jawed, like JCPenney's model of a doctor. And the way the movie spun it was like, oh, that's really great. You know, like
Wait, is she in Grey's Anatomy? Because you just described all the doctors in Grey's Anatomy.
Dude, she might be, for all I know, man. And this guy might be. But so anyway, like, it was this whole, like, you know, I'm just so glad things worked out the way they did between us because it allowed me to reach my potential as a doctor. And it was this real sort of, like, yeah, marriage is just a stepping stone to, like, you know, reaching your potential as a person. And isn't it nice that they both, like, landed where they're supposed to be? And I don't know. Yeah, it was fascinating. It was a really interesting sort of...
Is that another way of saying depressing?
Oh, it was super depressing. Yeah, it was super, super, for me, depressing. And, like, I didn't like it, but it was clearly a thing that, like, as an audience, we were supposed to like. We were supposed to be like, ah, look at how good they are with each other. You know,
I want us to get serious here. I'm totally late for all my appointments. It doesn't matter anymore.
Lay it on me, baby.
I have a real serious question. I want us to suss this out for a few minutes, okay?
Yeah,
let's not give the easy answers, but let's, like, think about this for 1 second.
Lay it on us.
Okay. It's fascinating to me that TC, given where he's at in his career, and I know what you're going to think. I know what you're going to think right when I say this. But it's fascinating to me that literally, like, he does not – he's so desperate for hits. Uh-huh. He's so desperate for, like, blockbusters that, like, he doesn't even allow himself to make any other kind of movie but these movies now. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
And, like, I'm fascinated by any of these guys that do it. But here's the difference. Is I feel like with a Liam Neeson's or some of these guys, you do see a level of diversity in, like, the kind of films they pick, where you literally don't see that with Tom Cruise anymore.
You're right, because I think older guys, they enter like an art film stage of their career where they realize,
like, with playing those parts, like whether it's like Samuel L. Jackson or whether you just said Denzel Washington. It's like, yeah, we're going to play action adventure movies because people like old dudes in those things. I don't know why, but they do. But we're also going to do movies where we are going to, like, be considered for Academy Awards because it was a heck of a performance that only somebody at our age and caliber can actually get to.
Right? Dude, so I think the best Tom Cruise movie of, like, the past 10 years – was the one that was semi-arty that he did with Jamie Foxx, where he had gray hair. Jamie Foxx was – do you know what movie I'm talking about, Pipe?
Yeah.
Jamie Foxx was a – he was like a cab driver, and Tom Cruise
was a
bad guy.
Yeah, that was a great movie. It started with an I. What was it called?
I don't know. I think
I'm going to look it up right now. Hold on.
Yeah, look it up, baby. I think it was called Collateral.
I'm going to get off Amazon.
I'm looking on IMDb right now.
Collateral.
Yeah.
Collateral?
Dude, every movie in the 90s was called Collateral.
It was called Collateral.
Oh, yeah, Collateral was good. I remember that one.
Really,
that was, I mean,
way,
that
was
14 years ago, but it was
2004,
good.
2004, not 90s. So.
Yeah. Dude, it was 2004, but it was a 90s movie still, you know?
Dude, it did 217 mil at the box office.
Wow.
See, I think Minority Report might have been Cruise's best movie of the last, you know, two decades.
Dude,
but again, we're talking –
that was a good movie.
2002.
Well, that's when he was doing, like, Spielberg stuff, you know what I mean? So, like, he was working – but I feel like now – it's like it has to be Mission Impossible. It has to be a reboot of whatever that top.
He did like Edge of Tomorrow, which was a sci-fi Mission Impossible. He did Jack Reacher, which was like a military police Mission Impossible.
It's all he's doing. Man.
Yeah, I mean they're all the same.
Like what I'm saying is, like, you can and again, I know part of it. And again, I'm trying to keep it on the serious tip here. I know part of it is that Cruise, like, loves doing his own stunts, and he's just kind of fascinated with that whole aspect of his movie making. But I mean, Big T, how many times have we talked? I mean, he can play a drama role. I mean, how many times have we discussed Jerry Maguire?
Dude, we love that movie. Well, with and good
like
reason.
Rain Man? I think Rain Man might have been, I realize you guys love Jerry Maguire, but Rain Man might have been his best movie ever, just in terms of sort of critical
acclaim. Dude, it might have been his best acting job. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah, it was a really good movie.
I mean, it
really,
does really help good. To share a screen with Dustin Hoffman, who's also not a slouch.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
But there's a guy, Dustin Hoffman, who aged gracefully. Not that he was ever like really an action star, but like he very gently like entered into those awesome, like kind of grizzled, arrogant old man roles.
And he hasn't degraded himself like De Niro playing like Bad Grandpa 1, 2, and 3 or whatever.
Judas Priest.
Yeah, but dude, here's the thing though, man. Isn't part of it though? Like Tom does this to himself, right? Because he doesn't let himself go. So like until he stops getting like Botox and like gets all the work done on his face, he's never going to look like a grizzled old man because he won't let his
dude. But he does. You got to see this Mission Impossible movie because like his face, in spite of all the work, like it became an old man face because time never loses, baby. You know, time always wins. Time is undefeated.
Yeah.
Time is undefeated. So
who's the big winner? Who's the big winner?
Time wins.
Time wins.
Oh man. Yeah, but time definitely won. And that's no knock on Tom Cruise, man. He's still like, look, if you put him next to a real person, like he's still way better looking, of course.
Well, I mean, honestly, can you even imagine that guy playing like let's say like a married guy with a grown up child who's like dealing with all this like, you know, age of life kind of like problems and scenario. Like you literally, like he wouldn't even be convincing in a role like that. You'd be like, what are you doing, man? Why don't you jump out of a plane? What is this?
Dude, that's the kind of role he needs, though. That's exactly
you know what he needs.
He needs to do a Terrence Malick film.
He needs to do a Netflix miniseries, like 8 episodes where it's like a slowly paced character development sort of thing where, he can play like a retired police officer who's dealing with like, you know, kids back from college or something like that. Just some sort of like, not necessarily artsy, just like paced out non-stunt driven thing.
Okay. I'm going to say something right now that's going to bring all this home. Right. And it's one comment. It's this,
bring it home. Voice.
Tom Cruise never wanted to be, wait for it, Sean Penn.
In as much as Sean Penn is like a weirdly jacked, steroidal old man himself.
Yeah, but Sean Penn has so much credibility.
Dude, you're right.
He makes movies for $20. He wins Academy Awards. TC has still never won an Academy Award.
He flies to Ecuador and interviews drug lords.
And doesn't get shot.
He has a series coming out on Netflix in September called The First, about the first man trip to like Mars or something. Like he takes risks and he doesn't mind and he looks old. You look at Sean Penn, you're like that dude's never even been to the doctor, much less like had any sort of like facial like repair jobs done. I mean he's the Keith Richards of the acting community at the end of the day. You know?
Dude, he is, but he's more awesome for it. You know.
And you just, but the thing is, you could never see TC do that. But you know, man, I would love TC to do that. I would love TC to make a Terrence Malick vehicle.
I would love
a vehicle
but
that.
But then no one would see it except for Ted and Brett McCracken.
Dude, me and Brett McCracken and Brett's lady would be there. It would be Tree of Life 2. And I would have to, the awkward thing about that is the discussion that would happen between Brett and myself after the movie, in which I would have to pretend to have liked it and pretend to have known what was going on. So there you go. Tom Cruise, Tree of Life 2. Let's get it done, movie industry.
Terrence Malick. I mean, I just feel like anybody you talk to that likes Terrence Malick, it's like I look at him and I go, it's just me here in the room and you don't have to front.
Baby, am I right about this though? Terrence Malick, that is the perfect like pretentious arty name. It gets no better than that. If my name was Terrence Malick, my life would be completely different. I'm not saying it would be better.
No, it would be totally different. And if you were like doing an award show, you would say it was great working with Terry.
Oh, it was amazing working with Terry Malick. You know, what a dear man. You know, what a gentle guy.
He's a lovely man.
He's a lovely man, Terry.
Terry just was so gracious and kind on set.
Yeah. People call him Terry. I call him Terry because of how familiar we are.
That's what I mean. You call him Terry. It's like when you work with Anthony Hopkins, and I remember Gwyneth Paltrow at the Academy Awards, he said, and it was just a privilege working with Tony. It's like, first off, Gwyneth, you're not from the UK. And secondly, just call him Anthony, like
And isn't he a Sir Anthony Hopkins now?
Yes.
Like, so calling him Tony is not just like, oh, we're gonna disrespect the man. We're gonna disrespect the title and the man.
Dude, yeah, my favorite one of those though, and I think we've talked about it on the program. I love it when people call Robert De Niro Bob or Bobby. It's so funny to me. Yeah. Oh yeah, I worked with Bob on Bad Grandpa 2, and he's just a wonderful, just so great.
They say the same thing about Robert Redford too. Oh, it was great working with Bobby.
And oh, Bobby. Yeah, what a
guy. I feel like his grandmother is the only person who should be allowed to call him Bob or Bobby at this point. And I'm sure she's passed away, considering he's 97 years old.
Is that all he is? Is 97?
God rest her soul. Yeah.
Mrs. Red.
Yeah.
Bobby Red.
Bobby Red.
I call him Red, actually.
Him. Well, you know, he's a lovely guy. He loves it when you do that.
He's a lovely man.
Bobby. Yeah, well, boys, these are all great ideas. These are all movies that need to be made. And I'm sure the Hollywood executives that listen to the program are like having rights negotiations.
Oh, things are happening right now.
Things are popping, man.
Maybe
people are at round tables right
maybe
now.
Maybe Ted can get called a lovely man for inspiring the idea for these screenplays.
Dude, I would love that. I'd love just a little lovely man credit.
Think when Silverdome gets somebody an Academy Award nomination, they're going to be up there and say, you know, it was great working with Teddy. I mean, Teddy's a screenwriter that we all aspire to working with someday. So it was a dream come true for
me. He's lovely. Yeah. I hope they say that. Like,
Teddy's a lovely man.
I want to be a lovely man in Hollywood.
I know you do.
That's the future. That's what I want more than any other.
You want to work at a camp or you want to be a lovely man in Hollywood. I get it. I mean, one of those things maybe can happen.
I would like to be lovely in both contexts. Is that too much to ask?
One of those things maybe can happen. That's all I'm going to say.
Baby,
dreams do come true.
You have missed your meeting. I don't know what we kept you from. You probably missed a flight because of this. But
yeah, I did. I missed a meeting on my flight. So
you missed a meeting on your flight in the private jet that you're subleasing from Creflo Dollar.
I've said this a million times. It's hard to do the ramp when you're just sitting on the tarmac all day. It's hard.
Ronnie T.
It's hard to accomplish these feats.
The man, the myth, the legend. And you know what? Resonate Recording does an amazing job of clipping out all the audio from the Cleveland airport in the background of all these episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's quiet.
Like all the hustle and bustle, the gate activity, you know, the gate changes.
I'm an executive suite, baby. I mean,
you don't really have to do gate changes when there's only like four gates, though.
Yeah. Baby, you're up in like the Admiral's Club, right?
I am. I'm in the like American Airlines Admiral's Club right now. I'm looking at a couple of these guys that are just, you know.
Oh, that's high end.
Wearing their suits and their ties, they're looking at me.
Business travelers. They're looking at you in your flannel shirt, even though it's 140 degrees out.
I have my clerical collar on today.
Clerical collar, flannel shirt.
Because I'm a Rev now, right? So that's what I have to wear. I don't do flannel anymore, right?
Dude, are you a Rev now? Can we call you Rev? Like, Rev is it provisional based on your edits, right?
Rev one, man. Yeah, absolutely. No. I mean, I'm in. The edits don't matter. I'm in.
So they kissed the ring. They made you. You're a made man, except that you have to do the edits. But we can call you the Rev.
Absolutely. It's a done deal. It's a done deal.
That's good. Yeah. That's really good. I'm glad.
Everything's changed. Everything's different for me now.
Everything's different. And you know, you're like the Terrence Malick of your business now.
I am. I'm like the Terry Malick of pastoring right now.
Dude, isn't that so great though?
You know what, guys, let's be honest. I literally am the Terry Malick of pastoring.
Dude, you kind of are. Yeah, you're all vague and obtuse and everybody pretends to like your sermons and know what you're talking about, but they really
don't. True that they pretend to like my sermons. There's no doubt about that. No. Yeah. Absolutely.
And every sermon is about twice as long as it needs to be.
Absolutely. I preached a whopping 44-minuter on Sunday, boys. Just
baby,
I need a little forgiveness.
More reformed as time goes by. That 44 is going to creep up to 54 in another year.
Oh man,
you're going to be one of these reformed guys. Substance is going to be a two-hour plus ordeal before it's all said and done, baby.
Man, it's rough. Yeah.
I know. It's like a Terrence Malick movie, Terry.
It's rough.
Terry. All right, let's end this thing.
Well, boys, let's end this with another name that's near and dear to all of our hearts and also listeners of the program.
I just want to thank Rach.
Yeah, I want to thank her. Lovely. You know, we've never interacted or spoken, but lovely person. Her name is Rachel the Held Evans, and because we have wandered to and fro, I will say until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
The content we feed our minds will eventually show up in our lives. If we feed our minds the lies and confusion of this world, our lives will begin to reflect worldliness. But if we feed our minds the truth of the gospel, our lives will start to reflect the heart and character of Jesus. I'm John Stonge, and each week I host the Dwell on These Things podcast, where we take a deep look at the Word of God and learn what it means to apply it to our lives. We don't skip difficult passages, and we don't gloss over the truth. If you're looking for a show that will put your mind in a better place and help you understand God's Word with more clarity, you can listen to the Dwell on These Things podcast at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcasting app.